couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Venom, Let There Be Carnage, The Many Saints of Newark, The Addams Family 2, Old Henry, and Bingo Hell. I'll also be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring The Night of the Animated Dead. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
A little bit of box office. Not a whole lot's happening right now because we kind of hit the doldrums of September. Shang-Chi stayed on top with $13 million for the weekend, which, by the way, is not a great number. I mean, it's a good number for Shang-Chi because it's been ruling the box office all month, but it's not a big box office number even in these pandemic times. And the reason that that came in first is because Dear Evan Hansen completely crashed and burned this weekend with only $7.5 million as an opening weekend, and that is not good. I mean, I think this is partly because of the movie, partly because of the bad buzz, but I think there might be a little bit of musical fatigue. You got to realize a Broadway production, a big musical, can do well on Broadway, make tons and tons of money. And if every single person who saw that production on Broadway bought a ticket, it would still bomb. You have to have millions and millions and millions of more people wanting to see a movie. So that's why you don't always get that translation from the Broadway stage to the big screen. Everything else came in under $5 million with this movie called Love Story. It wasn't even on my radar. I don't know anything about it. That came in with under $1 million. That's the only new movie aside from Dear Evan Hansen that ended up in the top 10. But it came in under $1 million, which allowed Paw Patrol in its sixth week of release to slide in at number 9 with about $1 million. So everyone's, of course, looking for this weekend to do well. You got multiple movies, you got Venom, and to a lesser degree, Many Saints in Newark, but a lot of people are looking for Venom to do quite well. And then next week, of course, you got the James Bond movie coming out, and that's going to be the testing ground for the rest of the year, whether these releases are going to be robust or the audiences aren't going to have the comfort of going back to the theaters, because I still think there's hesitancy going back to the theaters. And also the immediacy of it. Is it necessary to see this right now, or can you wait 3 or 4 weeks? But most likely none of those movies, either this week or next week, are going to crack that $100 million opening, or even that $80 million opening that Black Widow had, or at the end of the summer, the $75 million that Shang-Chi made for the three-day weekend over Labor Day. It made $95 million over Labor Day, but that's because you included those box office numbers on Labor Day itself. Speaking of Black Widow, the news broke very late in the week that Scarlett Johansson and Disney have finally settled their lawsuit. As I predicted a while ago, I said this is going to go on for a couple weeks and there's going to be some barking in the press, but ultimately they're going to settle because they don't want this thing to drag on. These kind of lawsuits would take months, and neither party wants that to happen. You know, Scarlett Johansson wants her money and Disney wants to give her the least amount that it can. And they finally came to an amicable decision. Now, what does this mean? I don't know. I don't know what the terms were. They're not disclosing them, and that's okay. That's their prerogative as members of a suit. But I do think from this point forward, actually from the pandemic beginning forward, it's going to change the way contracts are written. And I don't think that you're going to get any sort of guarantee in any contract anymore of a pure theatrical release for whatever reason, just in case. And then people like Scarlett Johansson, when you build these things in, they're going to say, I get a certain amount of the money from any release in its initial run or something like that. I think that this already has changed the way they're writing contracts. And again, part of the reason I think they're seeing stuff going back into theaters a little more aggressively than they really want to. I think the studios still want to do the hybrid releases because they want to capitalize on both audiences. But I think they're moving in to the theaters again a little bit prematurely for what they can eke out of an audience, partly because they want to avoid any other lawsuits. And from this point forward, everything is going to be written that it might go to streaming completely. The last thing, speaking of streaming, I wanted to talk about is Netflix had their Tudum event last weekend, and Tudum is what they called a T-U-D-U-M, which is that musical note that you hit when you open up your Netflix app. Ba-bum. So the Tudum event last weekend basically was Netflix planting flags in the ground saying, hey, we're still here. You know, we are not just going to back off of our TV. We got all these TV series that they're renewing and continuing, stuff like The Witcher and Bridgerton and Ozark getting its final season. You've got what the new the Cowboy Bebop live action series coming out. It's also their movies that they're going to be cranking out. And in this event, they named a bunch of stuff like Red Notice. We'll talk about it in a little bit. Extraction 2 with Chris Hemsworth. Army of Thieves. That's, of course, getting a release next month. And Don't Look Up about an asteroid with Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio. There's a whole bunch of stuff coming up that is showing that Netflix is not backing down, and they are still not just trying to stake claim with their award-winning television series like The Crown. They're trying to really build up their theatrical level versions of their films with big stars and big names. And as much as everybody will sit there and complain about it, you turn around and they're making stuff for streaming, you know. For as much as Martin Scorsese complains about people losing that theatrical experience, you know, he's doing stuff for streaming. So they're putting their mouths where the money is. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. I'm picking two things out of the Tudum event from Netflix and going to be spotlighting those. The first one is Red Notice, which is going to be available on Netflix on November 12th. This is the action movie with Dwayne Johnson, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot.
Now that you've been tagged with Red Notices, you've become the world's most wanted criminals.
Looking for something specific or just browsing?
You're under arrest.
Oh, my God. Read the room.
Help me catch her, and I will help you.
Teamwork.
Team. It feels weird in my mouth.
How's it going with your partner in crime?
We're work wives.
We're not work wives.
Sister wives.
We're not any kind of wives.
It doesn't look like it's going to be a great film. I don't know if the plot's going to be very good. I think it's interesting that they got three mega stars on this. I think you can certainly count all three of them as mega stars, especially Ryan Reynolds now after Free Guy and the Deadpool movies. These are bankable names, and it's going to streaming. It's a big, huge movie. I mean, this is even more than when Ryan Reynolds did Six Underground, which was a Michael Bay film. When was that? This year? Last year? I forget when it was. It was a year or two ago. That was a big movie because it was a Michael Bay movie, but you got these three movie stars and you're putting them in a Netflix film. So, you know, as much as it might look like it might just be a big dumb action movie, I think it's still staking a claim, and it's showing that they can work with big names and do big stunts and do a big international action movie, which is exactly where streaming's going. In addition to all the little stuff. The next one I want to hit is Stranger Things. Season 4 is coming to Netflix in 2022. There's no exact release date, but we finally got a teaser trailer.
Could you maybe clarify what sort of clues we're supposed to be looking for here?
The world is full of obvious things which nobody by any chance ever observes. Sherlock Holmes.
Not a whole lot's happening in this. You do get a glimpse at the kids, and the kids are growing up, and that's why they're already talking about doing spin-offs and based on Stranger Things. But this one looks like it's not just the nostalgia for the 80s, it's going back to like the 60s. So it's going to do this double nostalgia and this double time jump, which is cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. I loved what they did with Stranger Things season 3. That was my favorite of the three seasons. And I think this one has potential, but we just don't know much about it yet. So more to come with that one. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Addams Family 2 and Old Henry. to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about the Addams Family 2. Everybody's favorite creepy and kooky family is back for a road trip across the country while being tracked down by a mysterious stranger.
Time for some family bonding.
What?
Huh?
We are going on a road trip.
This is cruel, even for you.
Let's roll! This trip will bring the Addams closer than ever before.
Let's make some memories.
This is so odd because I had a chance to see this movie early, but the embargo didn't lift until like Friday morning, which is absurd. I think part of it is MGM is so distracted with releasing the James Bond movie, they don't even know what to do with the Addams Family 2. And that's a shame because I like these movies. Here's the thing. You got to go back to the original TV series. I know everybody always says it's never like I remember. Well, nothing ever is. And if you go back and watch a TV series, this cartoon is very similar to it. I mean, it, obviously they do bigger and more extravagant stuff. But when you go back to the original TV series from the 60s, it was a weird family just acting weird and expecting people to deal with it. And that's basically what you get with this movie. I remember when the first one came out, I actually never saw it in theaters because they did a very similar botched kind of marketing of it. But I saw it on Blu-ray, and I gotta say, I really enjoyed the first Addams Family animated film, even though it got creamed by the critics and they're, oh, it's just a kid's movie. I'm like, I remember watching the old series when I was a kid and I liked it. And that's kind of what it was. It goes back to the original drawing style of Charles Addams, original Addams Family cartoons. And it's basically this family that really loves each other and gets along and is a great family, being kooky and crazy and mysterious and spooky and all that kind of stuff. And not caring what people think. And I think that's a great message to have. And they have that in this movie. Now, yeah, I mean, it's a kid's movie. And yeah, there's a bunch of body humor jokes and there's a bunch of over the top craziness. And, you know, it's a silly, absurd film, but it is a cartoon. It's meant for kids. But I enjoyed it. I mean, the road trip storyline feels like it maybe should have come out in the summer. And what's funny is they've been struggling back and forth with this and Hotel Transylvania, the summer vacation version of it. And they've kind of been going back and forth. And at one point, both those movies were going to be opening either the same weekend or one weekend apart over October. But then Hotel Transylvania got moved around and got sold off to Amazon. So Addams Family, it's coming out in October, and October 1st is a great time for it, partly because it's Addams Family and they have a horror movie theme to it. And of course, here we are in the beginning of October. You got all of October and Halloween type stuff, but really this feels like it should have been out in the summer. It feels like it's the summer road trip movie. And I would say it follows some story connective tissues from the live action movies they did back in the 90s. And you can't expect it to be like those because those were very unique and those were very much elements of the 90s. And you had Barry Sonnenfeld directing with that live action. It was the first time you saw some of this stuff really realized in its full ability with visual effects compared to the original TV series. But I still feel that this has that heart of the original TV series. I mean, obviously it doesn't have the actors from it, but it still has the heart from the TV series. And I think it's in the right place and you've got some great voice work. And, you know, I had a lot of fun. I laughed. I thought it was cute. And that's what these things are supposed to be. It's a kid's movie. It's a kid's movie. Go watch it. It's a kid's movie. Watch it with your kids. Now you can either see it in theaters or you can pay premium video on demand. But if you're paying $20-$30 to see this movie, you know, it's probably cheaper than taking a family of four, that's for sure, especially if you just make the snacks at home. So, yeah, I'm going to have to say the Addams Family 2 kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Old Henry. An aging farmer with a mysterious past tries to keep his son safe when three riders come through the area searching for another man and a missing bag of money.
Is he alive?
Barely.
What do you think happened? Some kind of shootout?
My pa found you.
We'll go fetch him.
riders.
I'm Sheriff Sam Ketchum. We've been scouting for a man on the run. He's dangerous.
They ain't lawmen. They bank robbers. Why they didn't shoot you dead, I don't know.
I got this crazy idea. There might be more to old Henry than meets the eye.
This one stars Tim Blake Nelson as Henry, who's this grizzled old farmer who has a son, and his wife had passed away. I think she died of tuberculosis, they mentioned in the movie. And he just has a stake of land in the middle of the open plains. Well, it's the rolling hills, really, because it's kind of off the beaten path. And of course, like any good Western, there's some sort of mystery in his past, and there's something going on, and that his son doesn't know about. And these riders, of course, there's more to them than meets the eye. And you know something's coming. You always know in a Western there's the buildup to some climactic battle, so you're expecting that to happen. I gotta say, the thing that makes this movie work is Tim Blake Nelson's performance as Henry, because he really does a good job. Tim Blake Nelson is such a fantastic actor, and he does not get his due. And he oftentimes is second fiddle to somebody else. And we saw that with stuff like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where he really played second fiddle to George Clooney, but he was brilliant in that movie. But there's a whole nuanced performance here that Tim Blake Nelson does. Now, one of the things that I do get tired of seeing in Westerns is every Western has to be slow and deliberately paced. And, you know, that's not the case as it was back when they were cranking out Westerns in the studio system. There were a lot of forgotten Westerns out there, but, you know, Westerns were the action movie of the day. So it is a little tiresome when you get to a Western, you're like, oh, great, another deliberately paced Western. And this one is deliberately paced, but I think this one deserves this. And I really enjoyed the setup. I mean, you can kind of see where some things were going. You can guess some of the twists and turns, especially as they start laying out other elements of the story throughout. That's okay. You get things that are payoffs rather than twists in that sense. Stephen Dorff plays the bad guy. He's the leader of this gang of riders who comes in. And, you know, I remember when Stephen Dorff was playing high school kids. But he plays a nice, you know, middle-aged, almost gentlemanly type of bad guy. And you know he's got a dark side that you have yet to see throughout the film. But, you know, he's a little more held together than the other characters that he's riding with. But, you know, it works. And I think the two of them head-to-head, Tim Blake Nelson and Stephen Dorff, do a fine job. I mean, it's a very sparse Western, but it works. I gotta say, I really did enjoy Old Henry as a modern Western. And as something, you know, it actually takes place in 1906, which to me is a little after the Western years, but because they're out West, it was still the frontier at that time as well. So even though it's within the 20th century, it's just barely in the 20th century, and it still works for, well, you know, what it's trying to do. So I gotta say, I enjoyed it. Old Henry totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent! Yay!
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the many saints of Newark and Venom, Let There Be Carnage. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the two big movies of the weekend. I'm going to start off with The Many Saints of Newark. In this prequel to The Sopranos, we see a spotlight on Tony's Uncle Dickie and how some of the family's business dealings were formed.
Anthony got kicked out of school.
I went through all that trouble. And for what?
I'm always being accused.
You gotta be good.
That's what I want.
I want to do whatever I can to help the family.
That's what I want.
Do something about Dickie Malasani.
Look at Dickie Maltasanti. He steps up, takes care of his family, takes care of all the business.
I want to do all kinds of good things.
It's the wanting. Pain comes from always wanting things. But what do I know? I'm a murderer.
First of all, this is in theaters and it's on HBO Max. I think this plays well, though, on the TV or the big screen. But it's based on The Sopranos. And The Sopranos, you watched on HBO, and this is meant to be the jump or the leap to theaters. But I think it, you know, if you have a series that started on TV, it's okay to watch it on a high def screen that's 1080p and maybe, 40, 50, 70 or more inches in screen size. I mean, I think your home theater living room is going to do it justice. Now, I got a confession to make. I've never watched an episode of The Sopranos. That's partly because I didn't have HBO at the time. And it was not something like, you know, I swerved into Sex and the City every now and then. I talk about that every now and then. But that's something you kind of watch out of order. That was more of a sitcom. The Sopranos, you really couldn't watch that out of order. You had to watch it in succession. It's a drama series. So, of course, you want to get the arcs of the stories. I never watched it. And by the time I knew it was such a big deal, I mean, it had several seasons. It was not something, and I wasn't going to binge watch it in the 2 days that I had before the press screening of The Many Saints of Newark. So I thought it would be an interesting experiment to go in knowing nothing about it. I mean, obviously I'm aware of The Sopranos. I know the general idea that he's this mob boss who's going through therapy, but I don't have that baggage with me. And I said, this will be an interesting experiment. Will I be able to watch this movie and have it make any sense? Now, if you watch the marketing of this, this is saying, watch the movie about how Tony Soprano became Tony Soprano. Don't think of it that way. This is not about a young Tony Soprano. Yeah, it is. I mean, and Michael Gandolfini plays a young version of his father, and he does a great job in it. But it's not Tony Soprano's film. It's Uncle Dickie's movie. And that's important to point out, because I think if you go in watching this as the movie that makes Tony Soprano, you're not going to get that. I mean, Tony's on screen and he has quite a bit of scenes, but really Tony's a secondary or tertiary character, really. It's Uncle Dickie's movie, and it's about how he molded the family and led the family. And I mean, obviously they're into a bunch of criminal elements, but how he directed it. And you also see elements of what made Tony Soprano go into therapy. You see the softer side, or at least what could have been the softer side, what led to the conflicts and the internal conflicts. I'm just guessing, because like I said, I know the premise of The Sopranos is this mob boss going to therapy, and you see elements of that, and you see where Uncle Dickie is trying to be a role model, but he's also not good at that either. But there's the want of that, and you see the conflict, and you know, it's not just about being this powerful figure, it's the deconstruction of a gangster's psyche. And I think that that's really important. But like I said, you know, I'm just getting it as watching this as a movie about a gangster family in the 60s. I'm not coming with all the baggage of The Sopranos. Now, I think the fans of The Sopranos are going to go absolutely bonkers over this thing. I'm sure there's a billion little Easter eggs here or there that completely went over my head and I didn't quite understand, but that's okay. I never watched the show, and this has made me want to go back and watch The Sopranos. But you know, there was what, like 9 seasons of that, so it's going to take me some time. But those are on HBO Max too. So I'm going to have to say The Many Saints of Newark worked not just as a Sopranos movie, because I'm coming at that without that baggage. It worked as just a gangster movie, you know, a movie that was separate from The Godfather, not spinning off of The Godfather. It's a movie that you can watch as a gangster movie from the 60s and get something out of it. And I did enjoy it. So I'm going to have to say The Many Saints of Newark kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Venom, Let There Be Carnage. A notorious serial killer gains powers similar to Eddie Brock's as he finds himself being taken control of by a symbiotic alien.
I am a predator. I need to be free.
You have got to get control of your aggression, or you will get hauled off into Area 51.
You live in my body.
You live by my rules.
Eddie Brock, I want to give you my story. People love serial killers. I have tasted blood before, and that is not it. All I ever wanted in this world is carnage.
This is a mess. Look, I saw the original Venom 3 years ago in the theaters, and I thought it was okay. And I remember saying this back then. This was a kind of movie. It didn't feel like it was made in 2018. It felt like it was made before comic book movies kind of grew up and were fully realized as a storytelling venue in the cinemas. Comic book superhero movies changed through 2008 through 2012, because that's when you had the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's after you had The Dark Knight and the realization that you could tell a full-blown dramatic story. This felt like something that was made in like 2005 or 2006, you know, around the time of the first Ghost Rider or the original Fantastic Four movies or something like the original Daredevil. That's what it feels like. The Venom movie felt like it was made with a 2006 mentality. This one is the same way. It's stupid. I mean, I guess that's part of what people want. They want the silliness, and I'm seeing some of the reviews going, well, it embraces the silliness and the goofiness of a cartoon comic book movie. But at a certain point, you know, silliness will only get you so far. I mean, Carnage isn't just the bad guy in the movie. It describes the script. It is all over the place. In some ways, it's trying to be a legitimate superhero movie. On another time, it's trying to almost be a horror movie because of some of the elements and the visual style that it's evoking. And of course, the characters in it, you've got these symbiotic aliens that eat people's heads. That's kind of horror movie element. But it's also at some point trying to be this wacky slapstick comedy. And I mean, it overdoes that to the point that it squanders any sort of storytelling or character or background. We have this serial killer that gives the most dumbed down serial killer background you could. And it has apparently a mutant in it. I guess as his girlfriend. The serial killer's girlfriend, not Eddie Brock's. No, Eddie Brock is still pining for Michelle Williams' character. Venom is running sort of this slapstick Mystery Science Theater commentary in his head. I mean, it's not that you can't do horror and comedy and have some real drama, because we had that. You know, Edgar Wright did that with Shaun of the Dead, but it takes a special filmmaker to do that. And I'm sorry, Andy Serkis doesn't do that with this movie. It's all over the place. It feels weirdly rushed. I mean, the movie's 97 minutes, but it's like the pacing is like, it's almost like it's being run at like, you know, 120%. And it's not like an efficiency. It's just, it feels rushed. And at the same time, it takes too long to do this weird slapstick comedy gags and these running commentary event. I mean, it's, some stuff's funny, sure. But wow, this movie is just a hodgepodge of things, and I really wanted to like it. And yeah, sure, it's cool. It's, you get to see Venom and Carnage fight, and there's some neat visuals that are certainly evoking Tim Burton's Batman. But yeah, this movie's an absolute mess. Unfortunately, it kind of sucks.
Okay.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to give a review of the Blumhouse's Bingo Hell and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring The Night of the Animated Dead.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Bingo Hell. A dilapidated town in the Southwest faces the dangers of gentrification when a new and possibly evil bingo hall opens, run by a dark figure.
Welcome to the game.
Are you feeling alive?
Ese hombre es a snake.
Bingo! I got bingo!
We are all that's left.
We have to do something.
What's the plan, Granny?
Should I grab my shotgun?
This is part of the Welcome to the Blumhouse double punch that you get. You get two of these each week. This week we've got this film, and there's also Black as Night. I did not get a chance to watch that before the show, so that's also available. Next week, we have the 1-2 punch of Madres and The Manor, which is coming to Amazon. You got these two low-budget TV movies, basically, but they're TV movies in the sense that they're not going to theaters. They're going directly to Amazon. It's from Blumhouse Television. But I think we're blurring the line. It's a movie that's being released on Amazon. I think calling it a TV movie, you know, it's not like some old Columbo episode from the 70s. But this movie is, you know, it's a feature-length film. It's done by Blumhouse, so it is limited in budget and scope. But that's okay. That's kind of Blumhouse's thing. I love the fact that Blumhouse does these low budget horror movies, and they do some, they were doing a whole bunch on Hulu for a while, which was their Into the Dark series, where they were basically feature length films that were based on holidays or significant days. Like they did one for Election Day and one for National Pets Day and stuff like that. But this movie follows, a bunch of old people in this little town, and the town is getting dumpier, and the town is running into economic problems, and they've got gang problems and drug problems, and all those shops, they're older and they're dilapidated. But there's also these shops coming in, like these coffee houses and stuff, so they're facing the gentrification. So it's a little bit, it has this bit of an anti-hipster look to it, where it's souring on, for as much as the younger generation and millennials and post-millennials do have this economic disadvantage against the boomers, there is this predatory nature of things that millennials and post-millennials have, $8 coffee shops and that sort of thing. And so it addresses that. But really what it is a bunch of older folks in this community, and they go to this bingo hall. And they used to have a community bingo hall, but it gets taken over by this weird guy who is played by Richard Brake, who you might recognize him from. He was in 31. He does some stuff with Rob Zombie, and he sort of headlined 31 as the main bad guy. And he's very disturbing, and he loves to sort of chew the scenery, but he does so in a very creepy, uncomfortable manner. And he's essentially playing this, almost demonic figure who's, waving cash in front of them. You can win this money, but of course there's always some consequence to that. So it is sort of this parable in a way, and it deals with addiction, and it deals with greed, and it deals with chasing that dream and of just the avarice of money, of just wanting money just to have the money, but not really being able to do anything productive with it. Like one woman wins like $10,000 and, thinks she's super wealthy. And $10,000 doesn't go terribly far in today's economy. I mean, I'd love to have $10,000 free and clear, but, you can buy a car with that. You can pay your rent for, maybe a year or a portion of a year, or maybe a little bit more than a year, but you can't exactly live in mansions and a yacht with just 10 grand. And it's showing the hopes and the dreams and how, it is about, all horror movies should have subtext to them. And the subtext is not terribly subtle, but it is about the gentrification and coming in and being a predator on the community that already is downtrodden as it is, and preying on their hopes and dreams. So I think that subtext is there. It's like I said, not terribly subtle, but it does exist. So it does make it a little bit interesting. So I'm going to have to say that Bingo Hell kind of rocks as a movie.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on The Night of the Animated Dead. Have you noticed a trend here? It's October. It's the first weekend in October. We're getting ready for horror movies. We're getting ready for Halloween. I've been watching horror movies I always watch horror movies, but I've been focusing on horror movies in September as well. But now we're officially October. We are officially in the fall. The equinox has passed. And so I'm going to be focusing on a lot of horror films for the next couple weeks. And The Night of the Animated Dead is a, well, it's not a new horror film. It is a new production, but it is an animated remake of the George A. Romero classic zombie film, which features full color, new voices, and an extra dose of gore.
There is an epidemic of mass murder with no apparent pattern or reason. The killers are eating the flesh of the people they kill.
Look, don't shoot!
How long have you guys been down there?
That's the cellar. It's the safest place.
All law enforcement agencies have been organized to destroy the marauding ghouls.
Good Lord.
Stay safe out there.
Essentially, this is an animated version of Night of the Living Dead, and to the point of sometimes doing it, a shot-for-shot animation version of it. And when you see anything that is done as almost a shot-for-shot remake, there is a question of, was it necessary? And, you know, I don't know if this is entirely necessary. It's not. I mean, it is a shot-for-shot remake, and there's elements to it that you don't get from the original movie. And I'm not worried about the color, but you do get extra gore. That's the kind of the biggest selling point to this, is because it's animation, you can do whatever you want to an animation. It's a lot cheaper to do animated gore than it is to put all the effects and everything. So they can do a lot of stuff, and they do play up the gore quite a bit in this. And that's kind of fun for, you know, fans of the series. I mean, the original George Romero Night of the Living Dead has a certain visceral look to it. And the black and white imagery and the staging of it and the shots and the production design and the cinematography certainly has its place. And I it would never be something you'd want to colorize. You want to watch the old black and white 68 version of it. But this is more of a homage to it. It's an animated version of the film. It's got a new voice cast. It's got like Dulé Hill playing the character of the hero who shows up. Ben, I think is his name. With a would-be hero in this, you've got James Rodé Rodriguez. Of course, Sean Spencer from Psych, who is, you know, works with Dulé Hill. He plays one of the characters. You've got Jimmy Simpson, who's a friend of James Rodé's, who plays the iconic line, "They're coming to get you, Barbara." And you've got Josh Duhamel playing the grumpy old chubby middle-aged man, which I think is interesting because that's not what he looks like, but he does a good job with it. You got Will Sasso playing the sheriff. So it is kind of nice to hear some familiar voices in there. Like I said, is it 100% necessary? I don't know, but it's available on VOD now. I think it comes out on Blu-ray and DVD on Tuesday, which is October 5th. But right now you can get it on demand on VOD. So it's worth watching if you're a huge fan of the classic. It's not better than it, but it does give the gore and it's a nice little homage to it. And, you know, I appreciate the homage. So I'm going to say that Night of the Animated Dead kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Also available on DVD and Blu-ray this week, we have The Forever Purge and The Sparks Brothers from new discs, but there's also some vintage stuff, A Night at the Opera with the Marx Brothers. You've got Legend in 4K. You've got Children of the Corn, the special edition. Clue, the movie, gets a new release, which is actually a neat little film if you haven't watched it recently. The two G.I. Joe movies, Rise of Cobra and Retaliation, prior to Snake Eyes, are available. And the Melvin Van Peebles Essential Films Collection. Obviously, we lost Melvin Van Peebles very recently, and now you can check a best of list of a handful of his films from Criterion, which is available now. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the new James Bond film, No Time to Die. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.